Hear now from Luke 18, 9 to 14, and beyond, actually, a little bit. Jesus told this parable to certain people who had convinced themselves that they were righteous and who looked on everyone else with disgust. Two people went up to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed about himself with these words, "God, I thank you that I am not like everyone else, crooks, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tenth of everything I receive." But the tax collector stood at a distance. He wouldn't even lift his eyes to look toward heaven. Rather, he struck his chest and said, "God, show mercy on me, a sinner." I tell you, this person went down to his home justified rather than the Pharisee. All who lift themselves up will be brought low, and those who make themselves low will be lifted up. People were bringing babies to Jesus so that he would bless them. When the disciples saw this, they scolded them. And then Jesus called to them and said, "Allow the children to come to me. Don't forbid them, because God's kingdom belongs to people like these children. I assure you that whoever doesn't welcome God's kingdom like a child will never enter it." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So today in this parable, we're hearing these two men that are praying, and we're also thinking about children. And so I thought that I would share with you some prayers from children. Now, you probably have seen some of these before, but I find them hilarious. So here's one. "Dear God, please put another holiday between Christmas and Easter. There is nothing good in there now." Jenny. It's pretty good. "Dear God, please change the taste of asparagus. It's grass. Thanks." I agree with you, Sarah. It is grass. "Dear God, my mommy told me what you do. Who does it when you're on vacation?" Jenny. Here's a few more. "Dear God, I want to be just like my daddy when I get older, but not with so much hair all over." "Dear God, I keep waiting for spring, but it never comes. Don't forget." I kind of felt like that this last weekend with all this rain. What is this? "Dear God, I think the stapler is one of your greatest inventions." Ruth. And this one's my favorite. "Dear God, if you watch in church on Sunday, I will show you my new shoes." Mickey D. I just love that. Oh, these honest prayers. And these honest prayers that we hear in the parable of this upside down thing that we've been working with. We find two men who are praying. And they're on different sides of society. The tax collector is on one side. He's kind of the guy that's like hated by society, taking money from people. Where the religious leader or the Pharisee is kind of honored. He's the holy man, upright, the one whose job is to like be holy, holiness. And this parable that we're hearing, this story from Jesus, tells us from the beginning that Jesus is telling this particular story, and it's kind of flipping it upside down. He's telling us about these two people, and that the people to be listening for are those that have convinced themselves that they are righteous and looked down on everyone else with disgust. So this Pharisee, he's trying to say that these are the types of folks, if you see yourself as someone to be looked up to, or you want to be someone who's seen as right, to seen as righteous, those are the people that should be listening to the story. Jesus is saying, consider yourself like him. And this religious leader, this Pharisee, is trying very hard to live blamelessly. He's trying to do everything right, to not have shortcomings, to be perfect. He's trying so hard to live up to his job, of these expectations around him, to just be good. But it seems that because he's trying so hard to work on these externals, he's unable to acknowledge his faults. And thus, I think he's probably unable to get rid of them. It seems like this Pharisee is a little bit insecure. Maybe a lot insecure. I don't know. And on the other hand, we have the tax collector. The one that is kind of hated in society. He's kind of the IRS auditors of the ancient world. You know, I'm not sure if anybody here is one of those, and I'm sorry, but But he's kind of the opposite of the religious leader, you know? He's also wholly able to see his faults and shortcomings. Perhaps he's even kind of blinded by his faults and shortcomings. He's so convinced of them that he can't even look up towards God. He can't even get into the temple. And even more, he seems to be at a loss about what to do about these things. He seems to be in anguish about these things. And unlike the Pharisee, who seems kind of insecure, he seems to be a man who's humble. In seminary, I spent a good portion of my coursework studying the 12 steps. I even have come to find them deeply meaningful personally in my spiritual life as time has gone on. And I broadly consider them to be a source of healing for anyone. Mark will say that I kind of get in these phases where I think everybody should do things. I'm like, everybody should do the 12 steps. Everybody should drink sparkling water, you know? Like, I just really love things. I get into it, and really, sparkling water is great. It doesn't have any sugar in it. It's delicious. But the 12 steps, you know? It seems like this tax collector is working on his step 7. Now, it was so fun that today we had Carlos come and talk about how the 12 steps are being used in our building. But this tax collector seems to be working on his step 7. And actually, if you look on in your bulletin, it kind of lists all the 12 steps on the back of your yellow sheet. And step 7 of the 12 steps states that we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. The tax collector is beating his chest, and it says, God, show me a sinner. Show me mercy. He could have very well said, God, please remove my shortcomings. Father Gregory Boyle says in his book, Barking at the Choir, the embrace of our own suffering helps us to land on a spiritual intimacy with ourselves and others. For if we don't welcome our own wounds, we will be tempted to despise the wounded. I might read that one more time. The embrace of our suffering helps us to land on a spiritual intimacy with ourselves and others. For if we don't welcome our own wounds, we will be tempted to despise the wounded. This tax collector seems pretty aware of his wounds. While the religious leader who, like, everybody has wounds, right? Like, the religious leader obviously has wounds, but he seems to be wanting to cover them up. And Father Boyle says, it seems like he's also tempted to despise the wounded because he's been covering those up. Recently, I've been processing with someone I trust about this, like, major insecurity that I've been having, and I'm going to let you all in on that a little bit. I have an experience of insecurity. I am insecure sometimes. I know nobody else here is, but I thought I would just put that out here, that sometimes I experience insecurity. And the thing that I have been really having to come to terms with is that that makes me feel insecure is that I'm now working at a church. Yeah, I know. I feel really insecure about that. And really, one of the reasons why that is that I've worked in churches before. I've worked in a couple churches before this. And there was one church in particular that I left, and I was just a mess. I had been, it had been a pretty traumatic experience, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, all of that. And since then, I've spent a lot of time and money recovering. And I'm in a much better place now. I'm able to talk about it, have good support, and be able to be open with y'all about that. But it seems like the one part, the wounding that I have, the thing that's resulted in the most damage, has brought in me this desire, this need, this uncontrollable thing to just look at myself with, like, a microscope. I find myself looking at myself and just trying to do things right. Just trying to be approved, you know, just trying to, like, be okay in the eyes of myself, in the eyes of other people, whatever. I just don't want to mess up. And it's really because I just don't want to be hurt again. This wounding has caused that insecurity to rise up in me now that I find myself once again working at a church. I just want to hide sometimes. And so when looking at the parable with all of my insecurity, I find myself wanting to see myself as a tax collector, right? Because it's like in the story, you want to be the tax collector. He's, like, doing the right stuff. He's the underdog. I love underdog stories. But the religious leader is much more hiding his wounds. He seems to care much more about the outward appearances and like looking into like what's right. And the truth is, I know that I'm not the only one that is insecure. I know that we all experience insecurities or shortcomings or woundings that lead us to want to hide so that we won't be further shamed. And we use these things, and then there are usually these things that are kind of outside of us to hide. There are these things that we kind of hold on to so that we don't have to be seen, or really so we won't be hurt. And this is this idea where addiction comes into mind, where I'd like to talk about that. Gerald May, the author of this wonderful book called Addiction and Grace, it's wonderful, everybody should read it, says that addictions are simply this, attachments that come to rule our lives. He boldly says that we all have addictions. He's like, we all are addicted to something. That there are these things that we are nailed to, and that the same processes that are responsible for addiction to alcohol and narcotics are also responsible for addiction to ideas and work or relationships or power or insert thing here that you can be attached to. For me, this idea of attachment really rings true. We all have these attachments that we find ourselves stuck with. If you're looking for what some of those attachments could be, it's those things in your life that you just can't seem to give up. You know, it's those things that you just can't seem to, to give up. They have a hold on you. Another way I like to think about this is something called the false self. We all have this opposite of the false self, which is the true self that is honest and vulnerable and curious. It's wonderful and beautiful. But as life goes on, we begin to add things, these attachments that make up this false self. Richard Rohr, in his book, Breathing Underwater, Spirituality and the 12 Steps, kind of talks about it as scaffolding. Scaffolding, like when you're making a building, you have this outside stuff that people put up so that they can kind of create this building. And he talks about it as this idea that throughout our lives, as time goes on, as we experience pain or disappointment or difficulty or embarrassment or trauma, et cetera, we begin to put up this scaffolding. And it's really a protection plan. And soon, this scaffolding is all that we want others to see. And then it becomes all that we really know of ourselves. And we spend all of our time making sure that the scaffolding is kept up. There are times when we allow the scaffolding, these little pieces, to fall when we're vulnerable and we let ourselves show. But if that proves to be uncomfortable, if we receive negative feedback, or worse, if we experience the same pain that led us to put that up in the first place, that wood and metal go right back up in that open space. And over time, that scaffolding begins to look a lot more like full-on siding. You know, the boards closely put together. You can no longer see the house beneath. That true self underneath is no longer visible. This idea of scaffolding, our false self, full of addictions or attachments, and an inability to see our own woundings, then in turn, disallow us from seeing the woundings of others. You know, it's a problem. And the 12 steps say in the first one, it's you got to admit that you have a problem. It says, we admitted we were powerless over our addictions, that our lives had become unmanageable. And so if we have this problem, you know, that we see in this parable of a true self versus false self, I'm wondering, so how can we move past this? What is the bridge? And I think it's beautiful that right after that parable, we have this moment where Jesus invites children to come to him. I'm wondering if that is our bridge. The scripture so beautifully shows us that maybe what the bridge is to become like children. Disciples forbid the children, the babies, to come near to Jesus, and Jesus says, allow the children to come to me. God's kingdom belongs to these children. See, the truth is that whether you've forgotten it or not, once you were a child, and when you were that child, you were honest and vulnerable, and life was spiritual and beautiful, and your curiosity was unmatched. And then some things happened, right? Some things happened that told you that all of life isn't beautiful or spiritual, and that scaffolding started to take shape. And others, and maybe even yourself, started to forbid that child inside of you. And that child maybe became scared or embarrassed or ashamed, and we hid ourselves bit by bit. But Jesus says, allow the children to come to me. God's kingdom belongs to these children. And now, why do you think it's so important that children be allowed to come to Jesus? It's because Jesus sees them clearly, and the children see Jesus clearly. He can reflect back to them the truth of who they are, that they are dearly loved, that they are beloved children of God. Friends, I think that this is the bridge. This is the bridge that we have available to ourselves still. I believe Jesus is still saying to the little ones that we have hidden inside of us, allow the children to come to me. God's kingdom belongs to these children. Right after I finished seminary, I decided to do something I never said I would. I've said I would never do, and that is nanny. I nannied. I had just been a youth pastor and done youth ministry for the last 6 years, and I signed up to nanny these two beautiful kids. Their names are Kieran and Tara. You can see them up there. They were 7 and 9 at the time, and I enjoyed my time immensely with them. Their parents, knowing that I just finished seminary and not having any religious background at all, decided that they wanted me to teach them about religion. I was like, oh dear. And also, I spent a couple of weeks throughout the summer with them doing a whole week on religion, a whole week on the earth. We had Earth Week. And during the week on religion, they have some Sikh in their background. Their mother grew up culturally Sikh. Or Sikh, however you want to say it. So I decided that we talk about Sikhism and then Hinduism and Christianity and Judaism. And so we spent each day doing these different things and went and visited different temples and different places. And it was really fun. And I learned a lot because I didn't know about all that. But they wanted me to teach them. But there was this one day in which we went to visit a labyrinth in Pasadena. And, you know, labyrinths are very solemn, you know, like this really, like, serious thing. And so I took the kids to this labyrinth, and I was going to talk to them about what this is. And immediately, they started running through the labyrinth. They started chasing one another. And it was a maze. I mean, that's what it is, right? A labyrinth is a maze. They were so excited about, you can see it. I love this picture. It's one of my very favorite pictures. They just started chasing one another. And I was overcome. I was thinking, they get this. They get this idea that the labyrinth is this idea of trying to draw you into the heart of God, into the heart of Jesus. And looking at these kids experience the labyrinth in this way with such joy and playfulness and fun, I was thinking, that's it. That is the heart that Jesus has for us. Jesus said, allow the children to come to me. The tax collector allowed his wounds to be shown. He shared with God through prayer his childlikeness, his desire to be seen with those dewy eyes that Jesus sees us all with. He needed to come to God to have the truth reflected back to him. The reality is he was still in hiding, right? He wasn't even able to come into the temple. He wasn't even able to look up to God. But he had taken the first step by acknowledging that he had wounds, that the child inside of him had been wounded. He did not know yet, but he wanted to know what Jesus could tell him. And that is the truth about himself. And all he needed to do was but humbly ask for God to remove the scaffolding, his shortcomings, his sins from around himself, and return to the child within, return to his true self. Friends, I think this is our call. Jesus is calling forth the children within us to come to him and to be seen and called beloved. He is calling us to, yes, acknowledge our wounds, so our scaffolding can come down and so that we can be honest and vulnerable and curious, and so that we can know the truth, that we are children, that we are dearly, dearly loved. Amen.